You are tuned in to the radio program of record, the John Carlson Show. Heard this and every single day of the work week from 6 to 9 a.m., but you've known that for many, many years. The Commute with Carlson, along with Philip J. Vandenbort III, radio legend Mark Christopher.
Whoa. And whoa, whoa, whoa.
Parkas and hats and gloves and this cold weather advisory in effect, John, right now. Do you see these temperatures?
Well, I got up and it was 24 degrees and I said, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
20 from your hood canal.
Whoa.
Seattle warm right now at 24. 2 degrees in Spokane. 10 Moses Lake. Snoqualmie Pass at 2. Meanwhile, Anchorage, 17. So we're like in, right there. But
we're
the cold,
right there with our friends in Alaska.
Yeah, so think about those places you took a cruise ship to, and they're looking right around the same temperatures as us.
Then there's going to be some place in North Dakota that's like, I don't know, minus 27.
Yeah.
I mean, just because.
Yeah,
you know?
So bundle up. It's going to be cold advisory in effect through tomorrow.
But we're all here, nice and warm and cozy, and can't wait to talk to you about all these things going on in the show, in this country, in Washington State. It's such a contrast. Things are going so well in the nation's capital. So much good news. And then in Olympia, how would Trump put it? Not so good. Not good. And we'll get into that as well, some local stuff also. Again, it is another incredibly busy morning on the John Carlson Show. All right. I want to start with our friend Harry Enten, who you already heard a little bit from this morning. Harry Enten is looking at Donald Trump's poll numbers. Now, there's a couple of things you need to know. The CBS poll that I talked about yesterday had Donald Trump up 53% approve, 43%, or excuse me, 53% approve, 47% disapprove. Two very interesting things about that observation. The first is that that is more popular. Donald Trump is the highest approval ratings than he has ever had as an elected official. His entire first term, the entire first term, he never reached 53% approval. The second thing about this number that is so interesting is notice it's not 53 approve, 41% disapprove, and 6% aren't sure. It's 53-47. Everyone has their mind made up. Nobody is ambivalent about Donald Trump. And the majority's on your side. Think of all the terrible press coverage, which, again, just goes to underscore that much of the national news media are playing on one team. And Donald Trump still comes out ahead, 53-47, because of the sheer volume of what he is doing. And Americans' belief, 70% of the people, 70% of the people say Donald Trump is keeping his promises, doing what he said he would do. And that's not something people are used to in American politicians. It's usually you make promises and then you try and keep some of them, or at least keep them to a degree. And Americans have kind of acclimated to that. But not with Donald Trump. He said he was going to get guys out of girls' sports. It took him a couple of weeks. Guys are out of girls' sports. Any school district, and the American people are with him. Here's Chris Reykdal living in his bubble as Washington State school superintendent, saying, "Oh, I vow I'm going to oppose this. It's a violation of civil rights of a guy who says he believes himself to be a girl, and therefore I want to play on the girls' sports team. And if you say I can't, you've discriminated against me." And most people say, no. You know what the ratio is? 79 to 20%. 80-20. It's not even close. So you want to pick a fight? You want to die on that hill? Chris Reichdahl, you will die. You're not going to prevail on this. It just took someone who was unafraid of the shrieking, shrill minority who always have access to the news media. He's someone who's just got enough backbone to push back. Look at all the abuse. The women and girls who protested this, the parents and others, but particularly women like Riley Gaines, who stood up and said, "This is so unfair." Yeah, she was a champion swimmer out of the University of Kentucky, and she's in a national swim tournament. She's competing against a 6'2" man. And she actually ties him. I believe tied for fifth. They only had, you know, the top five finishers. She tied Will Thomas, who had competed for the men's swim team at the University of Pennsylvania. Then COVID came, and when he jumped back in the pool a year and a half later, he was wearing a women's swimsuit and said he wanted to compete on the girls' team. And they let him because it would have been a violation of his civil rights to not allow a fully intact man not only to swim with the women's team, but to dress in the women's locker room. A 6'2", fully intact, if you get my drift, man. Like I said, we're going to look back on this era and say, how did our elites so completely, totally lose their minds? Just an utter lack of common sense. And Trump said he was going to undo it. He did it. That's exactly what he did. Said he was going to start undoing DEI. DEI, again, not mending it, not reforming it. Said, no, at its core, it is discriminatory and divisive, which is frankly what some of its most impassioned supporters want. They want the country divided over race. They want race-based political thinking. Trump said, it's not going to happen anymore. And it's being dismantled. The latest example, PBS. PBS, Public Broadcasting, has dismissed its diversity team. And we'll get into that, PBS, as well. But I want to get back to our friend Harry Enten and what he says, not only about Trump having a larger approval rating than he's ever had and a massive majority who believe that Donald Trump keeps his promises, but that day by day, he has now had more days of 50% plus approval rating in 3 weeks. He's had more days of 50% or more approval rating than he had in 4 years as president the first time around. Here he is with Sarah Sidner.
CBS News out with a new poll showing that Americans seem to be liking what they're seeing, but it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Boy, she clearly doesn't seem to like.
I'm like, surprised. Why am I interviewing?
Really? Is this true? Okay, let's get to Harry Enten.
I mean, look, it's not just CBS. You know, I like to take an average of the polls. And holy smokes, I mean, look at what the difference is between now versus 8 years ago during the first Trump term, right? This is Trump's net approval rating on February 10th. You go back to 2017, Trump was already underwater at minus 5 points on the net approval rating. That's approval minus disapproval. What a difference 8 years makes. He's on the positive side of the ledger at plus 4 points. And again, it's not just the CBS News poll. We're talking about the Gallup poll. We're talking about the Ipsos poll. We are talking about the Pew poll. All of these respective pollsters have Trump in a better position now than they did 8 years ago. The bottom line is Americans are far more likely to say they like what they're seeing now versus what they felt during Trump's first term.
Okay, so how rare is this? Are you going to show us?
By the way, why is that, do you think? Why is America more comfortable with Donald Trump now than 8 years ago when he started his first term? Let me suggest it's as simple as this. Because they are now comparing Donald Trump with 4 years of failure. They are comparing Donald Trump to the Biden-Harris four-year train wreck. It's that simple. And they like that Trump wants to go in a completely different direction when it comes to the border, when it comes to crime, when it comes to DEI, when it comes to whether men should be playing in women's sports, foreign policy. They trust Trump more. So in an odd kind of way, the left, the political left, which pushed the Joe Biden administration to extremes that he was also happy, more than happy to accommodate. They set Donald Trump up for success. All right, back to Harry Enten and the CNN and his analysis of recent polling.
Sort of where we're at now and how rare it is that this number
changes. So I want you to take a look at this plus size, this plus sign, right? Compare that to the negative sign. Being on the plus size of the ledger, right? In positive net approval territory, a positive net approval rating for Donald Trump. Again, whoa. Entire first term, just 11 days, Donald Trump had a net positive approval rating. Compare that to the second term, just so far, every single day of Trump's second term so far, he has been on the positive side of the ledger. 21 days, all 3 weeks. That's already 10 more days than he was in his entire first term.
You don't hear CBS saying this, even though it's their poll, do you? You don't hear NBC echoing this, do you? You don't see ABC or PBS echoing or reporting this in this way, do you? So kudos to CNN. They're starting to do a few things. Have you noticed they're starting to do a few things right over there at CNN? You know, Scott Jennings, instead of getting an anti-Trump Republican and calling it balanced, well, we've got some anti-Trump Democrats and we've balanced them with some anti-Trump Republicans. No, they actually have a smart and glib and, you know, persuasive commentator in Scott Jennings. And then they have Harry Enten calling it as he sees it. Here's his last 10 seconds.
So, again, this is just another sign that Americans are far more likely to like what they're seeing in his second term than they were during his first term.
He's just calling it as it is. It's interesting. MSNBC, the only element of their programming that isn't just hopelessly, embarrassingly biased is when they go to Steve Kornacki, their polling expert, because he's just got to report the numbers and the reason for them, and he can't afford to spin. They don't spin. They say, hey, here's what the numbers are. Here's what they mean.
Yeah. There is an increasing amount of evidence that points out how the CNN hacks and the MSNBC hacks have been hyperbolic or distorting or misconstruing so much of these political attacks on Trump.
And see, and the people say, well, what about Fox? They're biased. Yeah, but they admit it. They admit that they are a conservative-leaning network. Even then, they've got people who call it down the middle. Brett Baer, I think, is the most, I think, the best newsman in America, best television news journalist in the country. But the Fox people, they don't try and say that Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Greg Gutfeld and the rest of the team there at Fox isn't conservative-leaning. They make sure they put in liberals who are not punching bags, such as Juan Williams, to represent an alternative point of view. But Fox admits where they're coming from. That's what's so infuriating about NBC, CBS, ABC, PBS is they say, "Oh no, we're journalists. We call it as we see it." No, you don't. You echo the liberal culture that you live in.
I counted 4 advertisements during the Super Bowl for Fox News. I've never seen that kind of an advertising. And real quick.
Well, it helps when it's on your network.
Yeah, right. It's cross-promotion.
Okay, but kudos to you too, John, for the fact that yesterday you were mentioning about this usaspending.gov website, if you want to see the spread.
usaspending.gov. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you can repeat that in a moment. I sent that out to key people that are just frustrated. They don't understand all this cutoff, whatever. They said, thank you. We never knew there was such a website. These facts and figures are totally amazing. So kudos to the Carlson Commute pointing that out and sharing with all.
Yeah, it is there for, it's the official source of government spending, usaspending.gov. You want to know how your government is spending your money? It's all supposed to be there. And much of it is. But the part of it that isn't, Elon Musk is uncovering. That's what makes this so scandalous, is that the outrageous spending from USAID and some other agencies that he's uncovering is not included in USA spending. But much of it is.
State by state, too, if you want to have a look. I was impressed with that.
Yep. It's almost all there. It all is supposed to be there. The part that isn't, Elon is uncovering. Okay. Hey, it's 21 minutes after 6 o'clock. It's time for the social media suite.
The
John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. right around the corner. Good morning.
Connected like a DC lobbyist, it's time for the social media sweep on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Can I say it? Jack Lemmon was one.
Yeah. I can't remember. The guy with the big jowls and the big eyes. He was coach for
a little bit. Walter Matthau.
Matthau was it? Okay.
Bad News Bears coach.
All right. With the 1960s out of the way, let's go to Philip J., or early 70s. Let's go to Philip J. Vandervoort III, find out what's going on in 2025 in the social media world.
Social media sweep sponsored by Chico's Bail Bonds. Walter Matthau reference
No, that's not correct. No.
That's a different movie altogether. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Hey, the real Super Bowl, I don't know if you heard this, but I saw this posted on X, Elon Musk's platform. The real Super Bowl is happening in Washington, D.C. right now. It's the Patriots versus the Steelers.
Ooh.
And it's a homonym, not an antonym.
Steelers,
Steelers. Who's stealing all the taxpayer money? Nice. The Patriots versus the Steelers. And if that doesn't sum up this week and probably the first 3-4 weeks of the Trump administration, I don't know what else does. But there's your real Super Bowl.
That's very,
right?
Very apt.
Sneaky. Sneaky clever right there. Jamie Peterson is the state majority Senate leader down in the Olympia legislature. You played this clip on yesterday's show. I'll play it for everybody once again about this whole parental notification for what happens with minor children that are the custody of the parent or parents.
Kids over 13 have that complete right to make their own decisions about their mental health care. Parents don't have a right to have notice. They don't have a right to have consent about that.
That whole idea of parental rights, parental notification.
And you notice Jamie Peterson is in absolutely no hurry to make sure they have that right.
I've got two updates on that comment by Jamie Peterson. Yep. Rob Schneider, guy was a Saturday Night Live cast member for a while. He's been in a variety of different movies and one of the sidekicks to Adam Sandler in movies. And Rob Schneider has some, you know, I think kind of family-focused conservative views on a whole lot of things, and he caught wind of this Jamie Peterson clip and reposted a version of it that was on Twitter, on X. And Schneider's conclusion was, I don't think this deranged moron, referring to the state senator, Jamie realizes that when Washington State parents have a child, they are not co-parenting with the state of Washington. If my son thought he was a pirate, do I have to watch him pluck out his eye, get an eye patch, cut off his leg at the knee, and give him a peg leg? You know, a bit of an oversimplification, but if this is going to be the standard for what Jamie Peterson is talking about, what's to stop a parent in a situation like that where a kid wants to go through with something like that?
See, and here's the scary part.
I mean, you're going to have to get DSHS involved.
Here's the scary part. Jamie Peterson is not a moron. He's an extremist. He's a successful lawyer, works for McKinstry, the building company, and he's laying this in the world he lives in. It's not extreme that a 13-year-old will overrule his or her parents on mental health treatment. Yeah. That's not extreme to a Seattle state representative or state senator like Jamie Peterson. That's the scary part.
I've got one more response to this whole parental notification battle down in the Olympia legislature from the state representative Travis Couture. I will give you that next hour on the social media suite.
Excellent.
I think everyone will appreciate what he has
to say. This issue ain't going away. That's a great idea.
Live with a slice of sarcasm and a full helping of fun. Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins. Weekdays 9 to noon. KVI. KVI.com.
Can we, in just a few minutes, explain what Elon Musk is really all about? The way it's being portrayed in the news media. I mean, you should see the David Horsey cartoon is, you know, again, David's fallen so far. He, again, used to be funny, used to be witty. Now he's just mad. Now he's just ticked off and trying to portray Elon Musk as a Nazi military commander.
Could I say Horsey is bitter?
Yeah, he's a bitter,
that fit it?
Bitter clinger. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, what he is actually doing, and the hysteria of his critics really underscores this. What he's really doing is uncovering what needed to be uncovered a long time ago, and it's not with some complex formula. Scott Jennings from CNN gets it really well. Have a listen.
The spending is interesting. We're not going to balance the budget based on these spending cuts, although some of this stuff is patently, objectively ridiculous. And when I see Democrats rushing out to defend some of the things that that he's cutting, I mean, it makes the Democratic Party sink to very low levels.
He's referring to, of course, DOGE, which is all about uncovering government waste.
What I see him actually doing, and the most important thing he's doing, is enforcing the doctrine of common sense. This was the doctrine that Trump laid out in his inaugural address. What is the ideology of the Republican Party right now? It is best described as enforcement of common sense. We have uncommon nonsense on the left, and we have common sense. And when you look at what the government is doing, agency after agency, and spending some of our money, we're not going to balance it on a $79,000 grant here or there, but we are going to restore common sense, and that's the point.
Okay. That's how it should be contrasted. You have Elon Musk trying to impose common sense onto a regime that is fully committed to common nonsense. Here is an interesting post that he made on the social media platform he owns, Twitter X. This is Elon Musk. To be clear, what the DOGE team, Department of Government expenditures. To be clear, what the DOGE team and the Treasury Department have jointly agreed to is the following. Require that all outgoing government payments have a payment categorization code, which is necessary in order to pass financial audits. This categorization code is frequently left blank, which makes audits almost impossible. Now, bear in mind, he's referring here to the Treasury Department, where you would think auditing would be a rather high priority. Secondly, all payments, government payments, must also include a rationale for the payment in the comment field, which is currently left blank. Importantly, we are not yet applying any judgment to this rationale, but simply requiring that some attempt be made to explain the payment rather than nothing. So it would be like if they're going over, they're auditing your checking. And when you write a check, you say, you know, here's who I'm making it out to, here's the amount, and here's the comment line. And it makes it much harder to track an audit if you don't have the equivalent of a comment line filled in. Again, they leave this stuff blank. Third point made by Elon. The do not pay list of entities known to be fraudulent or people who are dead or people who are probable fronts for terrorist organizations or entities that do not match congressional appropriations must actually be implemented and not ignored. Also, it can currently take up to a year to get on this list, which is much too long. This list should be updated every week, if not daily. The above super obvious, again, this is Elon Musk. The above super obvious and necessary changes are being implemented by existing longtime career government employees, not anyone from my team at DOGE. It is ridiculous that these changes didn't exist already. Again, so there's just a couple of examples of pure, simple, basic common sense. Any branch manager at any bank, corner bank in America knows this. For heaven's sakes, everyone who balances their checkbook the old-fashioned way understands this. The United States Department of Treasury does not understand this. They were ignoring all this. Even though it's required, they're ignoring it. More from Elon Musk. Yesterday, I was told that there are currently over 100 billion, that's with a B, I was told that there are currently over $100 billion a year of entitlement payments, federal entitlement payments, being made to individuals with no Social Security number or even a temporary ID number. If this is accurate, this is extremely suspicious. When I asked if anyone at the Treasury Department had a rough guess for what percentage of that number is unequivocal and obvious fraud, the consensus in the room at Treasury was about half, or $50 billion a year in federal checks being mailed to individuals with no Social Security number or even a temporary ID number. And again, final line here from Elon Musk. This is utterly insane and must be addressed immediately. The reaction from the Democrats was to run to court and say, this is unconstitutional. And sure enough, a federal judge issued a sweeping ruling that denied DOGE and Elon Musk's employees, prevented them from having access to their financial data, and even extended that to all members of the Trump administration, including the new Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. Now, it's not going to, this judge's order is not going to hold up. But just to give you an idea of how unhinged members of the federal judiciary are, along with panicked members of Congress, clearly Musk and company are on to something. They are trying to battle this entrenched, deep rot corruption with simple common sense. That is their weapon. Simple common sense of the kind that I just laid out here for you. So make no mistake about it. They are doing the right thing, and they will ultimately prevail.
Talk Radio 570 KVI, reaching you on the road, not in the bike lane.
Here's our buddy, Lars Larson. Our noon to three house. Now, this is interesting. Lars has supported all of President Trump's cabinet choices so far, except the only one from the Pacific Northwest.
And that is Lori Chavez de Remer, served one term in Congress, lost, was out of political office. And Trump is, I think, serving her up as a sop to the Teamsters and the other folks in labor who did Trump the favor of not necessarily endorsing him, but not endorsing right. Kamala. So Lori Chavez de Remer.
Though in my opinion, they would have had mutiny on their hands from the rank and file if they had gone.
I think you're right, because when the United Auto Workers did their own survey of their own members and two-thirds of their members backed Trump, for them to back Kamala Harris would have been spitting in the face of their members, which I think the unions do on a regular basis anyway. But this is dangerous because Chavez de Remer was one of, I think, three Republicans who broke ranks to back the so-called PRO Act. And the PRO Act is a pro-union, anti-gig economy, and certainly anti-right to work. It would be Congress saying to the majority of states, 26 of them, that have said, you have a right to work, and if you come to work at a workplace and there's a union, you can decide to join or not join. In Oregon, Washington, if you come to work in a union workplace, you are required to join the union. I've had that done to me, and I don't like it. And so the majority of states have now said, You have a right to join or not join. She backed the PRO Act that would destroy that from the federal level down.
So you know Lori. I mean, she's been in Oregon politics for a while. She did get elected as a Republican, and then she ran for re-election. My son was her field director in Deschutes County. And then, you know, she gets elected. She does a couple of things like you just said. And then she gets defeated narrowly last time out, like Joe Kent was. Joe Kent lands a job. She gets a cabinet post out of it, Department of Labor. So let me ask you, first of all, she's going to do what she's told to do by Trump. I mean, she's not going to go her own way as labor secretary. They're there for the Trump agenda, not for the Lori Chavez de Remer agenda. The second thing is Trump going to rescue her?
I don't think so. In fact, I think there are already pieces this morning, because she's coming up for the confirmation hearing, suggesting she may be one of the few, like Gates, that does not get confirmed.
Interesting. Are ready to start hour number two of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Okay, yes, it is cold out there. I will grant you that. 24 degrees in Seattle.
Two in Spokane. Do I hear a five?
Rob in Skagit County said, quit wasting my time. 9 degrees in Big Lake, Mount Vernon,
there you go.
Washington.
Is it frozen over? Careful on the ice, everybody. Degrees. Don't trust it.
Mike in Montana says to Rob in Skagit County, quit wasting my time. I listen every morning from Montana, KVI.com.
I love our listeners, man. You guys are in a groove this morning.
Thermometer says minus 19 degrees. Yeah, I know. When you're watching Yellowstone, it doesn't appear that cold now, doesn't it?
That's why they made Carhartt super insulated coveralls, right?
Yeah, that's why they exist.
One winter in Yellowstone, I was outside. I got yelled at. The guy says, get indoor, kid, get indoors. And I go, why? He goes, don't you realize it's only 3 degrees out here and you're in a T-shirt? You couldn't feel it. It's a dry cold in Montana.
Well, I bet you could feel it right now. Minus 19 in... according to our friend Mike, who listens. And by the way, a lot of people, you know, our friend from KVI years past, Kirby Wilbur, listens on KVI.com. You get perfect reception. And it's so easy. Just go to KVI.com and you see right across the top a big banner that says Listen Live. Click it. And you're listening.
Trivia note there from Mike in Montana. Carson. Mike, Libby, Montana. That's where I started. My seeds planted for radio. Summer of 72, Libby Locker days.
All right. Do they have a statue or a plaque or anything? Okay. Here's where I want to start. I want to start local. Did you guys see the video of this hockey dad pushing a couple of teenage referees off their skates?
Yeah.
Pushing them down?
Unfortunately, I did.
And I thought it was somewhere back east.
No. No, it happened right at the community iceplex that they have out there near Northgate.
Basically,
Kraken,
the old Northgate Mall.
Yeah.
Where the Bon Macy's used to be. That's been converted now for the Kraken's hockey practice facility.
And so they have Little League, you know, and Pee Wee. That's not the official name. Hockey games.
Junior hockey, I think, is more or less where we're at.
And there was a 12 and under game that was taking place. And the two referees were age 13 and 14. And I don't mean large for their age. You know, if anything, they were, you know, a normal 13, maybe even small for their age. 13, 14-year-old kids. And the video shows a man who's a big guy, wearing a stocking cap and a coat, walking onto the ice as the two young teens were conferring with the officials, and pushes them both onto the ice, just shoves them, and both of the kids go sprawling, and the man just quickly walks away. You look at that and say, what's that all about? Why would he do something like that? According to the incident report, apparently the dad, who is 6'2", and weighs 245, was upset. A fight broke out between two players during the game. Again, we're talking about under 12. That included his child. And the two young teens were conferring with the officials in the box. And as one of the referees was talking to the officials, he heard someone shout, "Get the blank off my kid," and then felt a strong push that knocked him off his skates. You see him sprawling. I mean, they got tape of this.
In the video, the dad that walked out onto the ice to go after the referee, he blindsides the first referee.
He blindsides him. Yeah. The kid didn't even know it was coming.
Yeah. It's atrocious.
And then the other kid referee was pushed into the wall and knocked down, landed on his elbow. And both the kids are okay. It's just a little jarring to have something like that happen. Have you ever seen, and this would be a good question for our listeners, have you seen behavior, you know, outrageous behavior by parents at a sport contest before?
Well, you know, my son plays some kind of high-level soccer.
Good soccer.
And
good
for the most part, the club soccer, the pay-to-play soccer, has been pretty good. But there have been some high school games where parents start jawing each other, and the play at the high school level is just far more physical than what I find with the club stuff. But if you're a parent who's PO'd because of substandard refereeing in a kid's game, you take that to the coach of the team. You do not take things into your own hands, and you certainly don't go out and physically assault a referee in youth sports. Full stop. If you're hacked off about how your kid was treated in a game by an opposing player, let alone a referee, you take that to the coach, and the coach is the one who has to go interact with the referee. So you'd never, ever take it into your own hands.
So we've got the text line open and the phone lines. If you wanted to talk on the air rather than just text us your message, whether you've seen outrageous behavior like this by a parent at an athletic event before.
Beyond the yelling, which we saw a lot of yelling when the girls were playing fast pitch for high school. They were at Ballard High. Jeff Polgula, good friend of ours at KVR, reporter from Northwest News Radio, in his side gigs, he is a referee. Mm-hmm. He's done football. He's done basketball. I bet you he'd have some stories.
Well, I talked to him. He hadn't seen anything quite like this before. The Kraken have now issued a statement. The Seattle Kraken and Kraken Community Iceplex.
Oh, this will be good.
Work hard to ensure that the Iceplex is a safe place for everyone. We're deeply disappointed in this behavior and are working with local legal authorities, Pacific Northwest Amateur Hockey Association and USA Hockey, to address this incident. We're still gathering the facts, and due to the ongoing investigation, we are unable to provide further comment or information. They have now located this dad, he was informed that probable cause existed for assault due to the video footage and the fact that the victim was a juvenile. So this is going to get legal and criminal. A man could, hasn't yet been charged, but he could be charged with misdemeanor assault for going up and pushing these two kids to the ice, shoving them, blindsiding one, again, because he didn't like the fact that his kid was in a fight. I'm guessing his kid didn't win the fight.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if it's for community sports, John, and Phil's on the phone, and I'd like to see if he'd answer this. I think Karen and I had to file or sign a document when the girls were playing sports, volleyball in high school and, like I said, fast-pitch softball, from the parents saying, you realize you come to a game, you watch it, and kind of like, don't
do things. Oh, I'm sure he'll be,
things.
I'm sure at the very least. I get the question now is whether they want this to become a criminal matter or whether they want to handle it in-house. I'm guessing he'll be banned for life.
Yeah. Phil, did you ever have to sign a document for a school? Like, as parents, we will just sit and watch and not get involved in referees and confrontation.
Yeah, I'd have to think. I don't recall having to do that for the high school team.
No. Right.
But I mean, the code of conduct, you know, extends beyond the players. It should extend to fans on the sideline for these sort of sports events.
Well, also, there's got to be, you know, a sense of setting a good example. And
you know, that's something my wife brought up yesterday when we were watching the news coverage of this video of the dad going after the two hockey referees. That, you know, how is that kid going to feel now? And all of his teammates, your dad was the one that lost his mind and broke the law and tackled, basically blindsided this ref.
I would like to hear the father's side of the story, because what he did seems so incredibly wrong. And it's in the "what on earth were you thinking" category. You know, it's one thing when you jawbone, you know, kids, you know, who are playing against your kids, or you're loud or obnoxious. That's one thing. But when you literally walk out on the ice and you shove a couple of 13-year-olds, and then, you know, get back in and leave, that's just almost unspeakably wrong, inappropriate, and calling for punishment.
The dad on approach to this was saying, "Hands off my kid." You've seen the video. What is the ref just like backing the two away from fighting, or just kind of holding?
Well, that's the thing. That fight had already ended.
The play
had already stopped for some other penalty. And that's how, when the dad walked out onto the ice.
And the players, the fight had already ended. There had been penalty, and I am guessing the referees were conferring with officials about, okay, we need to lower the temperature here on the ice. These kids are getting out of control. And then this dad just lumbers over there. Obviously, he's not wearing skates. He just walks over there and shoves the one kid.
And the father, you mentioned the father's size. He just dwarfs this teenager who's refereeing the youth hockey game.
Skinny little 13-year-old kid wearing a referee shirt, and then thankfully, shoves the other one down,
you know,
too.
And thankfully the referee is wearing a helmet like the players, because he flops back on back. And
he hit his head.
Yeah, you could see he clearly contacted his helmet, hit the ice.
So he
could have been a concussion.
Could have been hurt. Instead, they were what you would call shaken up, for understandable reasons. Luckily, they're otherwise okay. But, you know, that's one example of bad behavior. For another, let's update a story that we brought to your attention yesterday about three guys who were vandalizing a freeway. Was it a wall or an overpass there at I-90
in
Dearborn?
It was a wall at the exit of northbound 5 at Dearborn.
Yeah, okay. And when someone drove by and saw what they were doing, they turned, pulled at least one gun, and started firing at him. Again, graffiti taggers started firing him. There were three of them. When they were arrested, they got a couple of guns and a whole bunch of spray paint and took them to the Hooskow. Are you ready for this? Two of them are already released. Here's Como 4's Lin-Ann Nguyen.
What started out as graffiti turning to violence. WSP, along with SPD, responded to the exit ramp from northbound I-5 onto Dearborn Friday night after an innocent driver reported being shot at.
Just after 11 p.m., we received a 911 call from a victim saying that they were taking the ramp from northbound I-5 to Dearborn and came across some taggers. They were passing through or leaving that area. They heard shots fired, and thankfully, their vehicle wasn't hit.
Responding officers were able to capture three suspects who were caught with two guns and a bucket of spray paint. The victim was also able to positively ID them. The suspect, 24, 28, and 33 years old, were all booked into jail for aiming or discharging a firearm. But less than 24 hours later, two of them had already been released on a $1,000 bail. This latest incident comes as local authorities are trying to crack down on graffiti taggers, arresting more than a dozen in December and charging many of them with malicious mischief.
Yeah, well, charging them with felony mischief is a good idea given the economic damage they do when they are vandalizing a public space like that with graffiti.
And but is that now a felony? Felony malicious mischief, or is there a misdemeanor as well?
No, that's
malicious mischief.
Malicious mischief is a felony. Yeah.
The other thing amazing, too, two of them in their 20s and a 33-year-old when most are teens that get caught for all this graffiti.
I want to know why, when they catch them with a couple of guns, first of all, it would be interesting to know if those guns were illegally possessed, i.e. if these guys have criminal records that include a felony. Secondly, what the hell is this $1,000 bail? $1,000 bail? That means you have to post $100 and you're out. And the other guy, who I'm assuming was the trigger man, $75,000 bail? That's it? $75,000 bail?
I feel like we've had cases where there was an attempted murder or somebody did get shot and bail was like $50,000.
Again, it is outrageous to me when you aim a deadly weapon at someone and shoot, and unlucky for you, but very lucky for the victim, the shot misses. So therefore, it's just an illegal discharge of a firearm. $75,000 bail.
Yeah. No, note on this.
What's going on here?
Where the wall, as I explained, northbound 5 exit Dearborn. This wall just down, right there, is the infamous jungle under I-5.
Yeah. No. Very adroit point about where these guys may have been from. The notorious jungle homeless encampment, which should have been shut down a long time ago.
Or they certainly use that as an escape route if they need to.
Yep. Yeah. It is coming up on 21 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vatterworth III, right around the corner with the social media sweep. We will have a special announcement on tomorrow's show at 8:03 in the morning. You're not going to want to miss. Again, that's a special announcement on tomorrow's show, 8:03 tomorrow. Good morning.
Theme Tuesday.
A-team?
Keep going.
Oh, come on now.
Come on, that synthesizer sounds like an ambulance siren, doesn't
it? Yes. Emergency?
Keep going. You're on the right track. Good-looking doctor.
Medical center?
There you go.
Okay, that counts.
Yeah. No, I can't remember.
I got it in under the wire.
Yeah, who was a good-looking actor? Promoted the
Chad
fact
Chad Everett?
That Chad Everett.
Why do I know that?
I don't know. But I was like, wow, you can have a good-looking doctor? This is proof. How would you remember Chad Everett?
That's right. For the older ladies, there was Marcus Welby, M.D., if I'm not mistaken. All right. What do we got going, Philip J. Vatterworth III?
Continuing along on one of the items I hit on an hour ago on the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, and this goes to the comments coming from a Senate majority leader in the Washington legislature. This is a Seattle State Senator, Jamie Peterson, and this all revolves around the parental notification state initiative that the Democrats in this legislative session are trying to water down. So here's what the Senate Majority Leader Jamie Peterson said late last week to Fox News that has set off alarm bells for all kinds of family-concerned conservatives and Republicans in the legislature.
Kids over 13 have that complete right to make their own decisions about their mental health care. Parents don't have a right to have notice. They don't have a right to have consent about that.
So cutting the parents out of that equation for any sort of health-related decisions by their child. And so much of this revolves around schools having to notify parents. That's what the statewide initiative was about. State Representative Travis Couture is a Republican from Mason County. He's in Allen in the state legislature, and he put together an op-ed on this, and he posted the entire op-ed to his X account. But let me give you a little excerpt of how he's reacting to this push by Democrats in the legislature to water down the parental notification law. He writes, "Parents are not upset because they suddenly decided to care about a 40-year-old law. They are upset because the government has moved the goalposts, expanding the definition of mental health care in ways that go far beyond what was ever intended. The fight for parental rights in Washington is not about rolling back access to therapy. It is about stopping the state from making life-altering medical decisions for children behind their parents' backs. Washington Democrats can try to rewrite history, but parents know the truth. Renewed efforts by Democrats in Olympia to erase voter-backed parental rights and the recent national report card scores, these would be the eighth grade test scores that you were talking about a week ago, which report Washington State was the worst academic with the worst academic outcomes in math and reading in three decades,
yep,
underscore the need for more parental involvement in schools, not less."
Well, the downside of all this is you're going to see more parents just simply say, "We're leaving."
Mm-hmm.
And when parents pull their kids out of the public school system, the school system gets less funding because funding is apportioned by a formula.
It's assigned based on the student enrollment.
So when the student leaves, that money leaves. And they have only themselves to blame. And Travis Couture really scores this correctly. What has changed is they wouldn't have dreamed back in the 80s of using that law for the purposes it's being used today. So the radicalization of not just the House and Senate, but of the public school establishment, the radicalization is well underway. And if it is not reversed, then the damage to the school district, not to mention to a whole lot of kids, is going to continue.
Yeah. Let's continue along.
It's not just kids going behind their parents' back. It's kids going behind their backs colluding with school counselors and others.
What if you've got teachers or a counselor at a school that's trying to persuade a kid?
That's the problem.
Dangerous.
Schools are colluding with 13-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than being a partner with a parent, they're the partner with the obviously emotionally fraught 13-year-old or 14-year-old.
All right. Let's conclude with another story that I'm finding that is compelling for me in Black history, since this is Black History Month. We did a lot of this last week as well. The first Black recipient of the Medal of Honor is Army Sergeant William H. Kearney. He earned the honor in the Civil War. He was born into slavery in Virginia in 1840. His family was eventually granted freedom and moved to Massachusetts. Kearney was eager to learn and secretly got involved in academics, despite laws and restrictions that banned blacks from learning to read and write. Kearney had wanted to pursue a career in the church, but when the Civil War broke out, he decided the best way he could serve God was by serving in the military to help free the oppressed. He joined the Union Army, was attached to a company, the 54th Massachusetts Colored Infantry Regiment.
Oh, they made a movie about that. Okay. Glory. The movie Glory was made by that regiment, the 54th Massachusetts.
The first official black unit recruited for the Union in the North. 40 other black men served with him, including two of famed abolitionist Frederick Douglass's sons. Kearney's training would put him to the ultimate test during the unit's first major combat mission. It was in Charleston, South Carolina, July 1863. The soldiers of Kearney's regiment led the charge on Fort Wagner. During the battle, the unit's color guard was shot. Kearney was just a few feet away, saw a dying man stumble, and he scrambled to catch the falling Union American flag. Not once did he allow that flag to touch the ground. His heroics inspired other soldiers that day and were crucial to the North securing victory at Fort Wagner. Kearney was promoted to the rank of sergeant for his actions. Despite suffering several serious gunshot wounds that day, Kearney kept the symbol of the Union held high as he crawled up the hill to the walls of Fort Wagner. For his bravery, Carney was awarded the Medal of Honor May 23rd, 1900.
Yeah.
25 years later. Yeah.
Took a while.
30 years later.
35 years later, yes. Anyway, great great report on that. Thank you for bringing, again, that movie and that book and that regiment, 54th Massachusetts, back to life. It is 32 minutes after 7 o'clock when we come back. Do you know today's election day in a lot of places? And we'll tell you about a couple of those elections and why they matter are coming right up.
Well, you think cold enough for a three-dog rating on our temperatures here? Three-dog night?
Oh, there we go.
See, there's connection to the cold weather, you guys.
By the way, they're in concert at the Seattle Center Arena on Saturday. Tickets at Fidelity Lane. So,
remember those days?
This is a concert listing from 1979.
1971.
Be in line at 6.
All right.
No such thing as online.
Welcome back, everybody. Did you guys know today's election day?
Yeah.
I realized last night, I have that envelope sitting on one of the tables in the living room.
In a lot of cities throughout King County, there is no election. There's no election where I live. There are in other cities and towns throughout King County, including Seattle. And Burien has an interesting, are you following this? Their minimum wage increase is on the ballot in Burien, which is just south of Seattle, kind of southwest of Seattle. Preston Phillips from Como 4 has the latest.
Its main goal is to align the city's minimum wage with that of neighboring city of Tukwila. Large employers would pay $21.10 an hour, and medium-sized employers would pay $19.10 an hour. If approved, the wage would be adjusted annually for inflation.
Wow.
So just keep going up, 21 plus. Over 19 if you're a, quote, medium-sized employer. Here we go again. Never mind the connection between, you know, lifting the minimum wage and higher prices. How many times do we have to show that this actually, for entry-level workers, the minimum wage is a loser? That if you compare compensation for someone who holds a minimum wage job, their compensation at the end of the year will probably go down rather than up. Now, how can you raise the minimum wage and have their compensation go down? Very simple. A lot of stores will say, you know, we've been closing at 10. These new minimum wages, you know, it just really makes it hard for us to stay open till 10. We don't get much business. We're going to wrap her up at 8 o'clock. Or they'll say, you know, we have 4 employees working the sandwich shop. You know what? I think we can make do with 3. You get fewer hours, and you might even end up getting laid off. And quite frankly, as we've seen with great clarity in Seattle, remember we talked about this small business, small bakery in West Seattle. The entire business just goes away. So you can lose hours. You can lose employees. You might even lose the business. We really need to see people start balancing, recognizing this economic reality by voting no on minimum wage. And by the way, that is a revolutionary act, because people always, you know, Washington's minimum wage law was raised by voter initiative. I think this goes back to the 1980s. A state representative named Jennifer Belcher, who later became, I believe, lands commissioner, was championing a higher minimum wage. And it became a populist campaign theme, and it passed with, you know, over 65% of the vote. Wasn't even close. Now, hopefully, people are beginning to understand the connection between higher minimum wages and lost opportunities. Opportunities for employment, opportunities for higher or for working your way up getting promoted. And if they vote no on the minimum wage in Burien, that will be the first time that I'm aware of where the people went to the polls and voted no. The reason why that you want to vote yes is, you know, if you yourself remember when you were a kid, yeah, you know, give them a raise. Because instead of the government taking your money to give to people who aren't working or who, you know, aren't working full time in the form of welfare or entitlement programs, they're saying, no, we'll have the employer pay them more and they'll keep working. So they'll get more money, but they'll still be out there working. A lot of people say, well, yeah, that sounds good to me. And so they vote for the higher minimum wage. And then this happens. What we have been reporting, the carnage in California when they raise their minimum wage has been so obvious. But getting rid of a higher minimum wage once it's in there, once it has taken effect, that's next to impossible, very difficult. So there is that. Then in Seattle. We'll get to the Seattle thing in just a minute because I want to talk to Jim. Jim is calling from Tacoma, and he's been in the restaurant business, haven't you, Jim?
Yeah, 35 years, and it was a long 35 years.
Okay, so what's your take on things like the Burien minimum wage going up to between $19 and $21?
Well, one thing I kind of in my business, fast food. So, you know, I mean, we were on a tight schedule. We weren't worried about hours. We were worried about pennies. But one thing I noticed, the more you have to pay the new kid, the dishwasher, the high school kid, the junior high kid, your friend, I mean, whatever, you pay them more. Then you got to, at the end of the day, there's only so much in the pot. You've got a manager that's been there 20 years who deserves more money, but there's nothing left for them because the minimum wage is so high. The new kid's getting almost as much as the store manager.
Well, I was going to say it would also create, understandably, social pressure from within for everyone else to get a raise from the guy who's been there 6 months. Well, if his new wage is almost what mine is, I should get a raise.
Yeah, and exactly.
Up to assistant manager, et cetera.
Yeah, the pie is only so big, though. I mean, at the end of the day, you only got, you know, X amount of dollars in the pot, and if you're giving too much away to the new kid, there's nothing left over for, yeah, like I said, the manager, the assistant manager, the cooks and chefs that have been there for 10, 15 years. It makes it tough to distribute that when, you know, you don't have the ability to distribute it properly.
If you were calling the shots when it comes to entry-level work, you know, young people working, putting your 35 years of experience to work here, what changes would you make in Washington law?
Man, huh, boy, that's getting over my pay grade right there. But I definitely wouldn't be, I think a good minimum wage for an adult who, you know, is trying to make a living, yes, and feed a family, yes. But when you got a high school kid, there should be a step in it somewhere where, you know, the high school kid or the new kid or, you know, somebody who's just working, you know, weekends for tips, because that's another, you know, pretty tough one to swallow too. When, you know, some servers, not in my business, but lots of restaurants are making $20, $30, $40 an hour in tips. Then you pay them $20 an hour on top of it. You know, that's kind of, it kind of fools the whole minimum wage idea, because now you're at $60 an hour, not 20.
Yeah. If you don't mind, since you're retired, what was your business?
It's Greek to me. It was a little pizza Greek restaurant in Tacoma, 35 years, and it was good. It was just time. I was tired, and, you know, I was tired for a lot of reasons, not just minimum wage, but, you know, and minimum.
The one on 6th Avenue?
Yep, that's it.
Ah, all right. I think I've been there before. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
well,
35 years. I hope you had been there.
I had plenty of time, right?
Okay, I'm no only going to disagree with a single thing you said here, Jim. The only thing I'm going to
go ahead, go for it.
Okay. When I said, tell me what changes you would make, and you said, oh, it's above my pay grade. No, no, Jim, that's exactly your pay grade.
Yep.
That's exactly your pay grade. Local knowledge is the best knowledge, and you have day-to-day experience in coming up with, you know, making a payroll and having to, you know, pay for supplies, equipment, cleaning, etc. You are the kind of people who should be making these decisions, not legislators who have never held a job in the private sector.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
certainly have never signed the front of a paycheck.
Well, and what gets me to, and I've said this many times before, is that a lot of businesses, you know, they talk about cutting jobs, you know, $100,000 jobs. Other businesses talk about, you know, cutting hours by 2 hours, you know, at the end of the night to save payroll. You know, in our restaurant business, people don't understand. We look at 15-minute increments. We look at 10-minute increments. I mean, every penny counts because it is such a low profit. By the end of the day, those last few pennies is all that's left over. So if you're not watching the payroll, you know, the time clock for the last 10 minutes of the day, I mean, that's could be the difference of making money that day and not.
What are you doing now?
Just sitting here looking at the water.
Looking at the water and listening to the John Carlson show. That sounds like paradise.
Yeah, it's not bad. But I do still have a little.
All right. Very good. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. That's our friend Jim from Tacoma. Great time on the John Carlson Show. You got 11 minutes to 8 o'clock on the commute with Carlson. Good morning. All right. 6 minutes to 8 o'clock, the John Carlson Show. Well, we're talking about local elections. Seattle having a local election today. Two big questions on the February ballot. The first is having to do with housing. Should voters create a Seattle, well, they've already created the Seattle Social Housing Developer, but should it be funded? Because it hasn't been funded yet. In other words, should it go forward? And if so, should they pay for it out of existing taxes, or should they impose a new tax? And my answer here is easy. No, don't fund it. It's the wrong approach. It's not going to work. And Seattle doesn't need new taxes. Several companies have weighed in saying, look, if you're going to vote to fund this new social developer position, a program, then go ahead and do so, but use existing revenue. I said, no, don't use existing revenue. Don't fund this office. You need lower taxes and less regulation if you want more housing in Seattle. Finally, the school levy, Paris school levies, wanting to know how voters feel about the school levies. Here's how you should feel. We don't continue to subsidize failure. Give us a reason. There's a vote of confidence that you have earned because you haven't. Voters in Seattle should be no on the operations levy, no on the capital levy, for crying out loud. Quit subsidizing failure. And we are back. John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. 24 hours from now, at exactly 8:04 or thereabouts, we'll have a special announcement on tomorrow's show. Again, Wednesday, special announcement on the John Carlson Show at about 4 minutes after 8. In other words, 24 hours from now. Don't want to miss that announcement. So please be with us tomorrow. Be tuned in as the Commute with Carlson gets underway tomorrow, 8:03, 8:04 therein. And special announcement for all KVI listeners. All right. Let's start local this hour of the Commute with Carlson. If you didn't know this, you should know that because of a voter-approved initiative more than 20 years ago, local governments can only raise property taxes in a jurisdiction, usually a county, 1%. 1% per year. Now, your own property taxes might go up more than 1% depending on, you know, assessed valuation and the like, but it had been 6% a year. So every single year, because they were allowed to take up to 6%, the county would take 6% every time. They just immediately say, we can take 6%, we're taking all 6%, year after year after year after year. And then about 20 years ago, came an initiative to stop all that and reduce it to, you may now take 1% per year plus anything from tax revenue from new construction. So it actually gave local governments an incentive to make it easier to develop and grow. There is now a bill called 1334, House Bill 1334. A hearing has just started that will allow, under House Bill 1334, the government to take not 1% a year, but 3% a year. Now, the way that it works currently is, again, government is entitled to take 1% per year. That's what the county can do. City can do this. All local governments that receive property tax funding can have a 1% increase a year plus the increase from new development. If they go beyond that 1%, they need voter approval. You got to go to the voters and ask if you can go above that. And most of the time, voters are kind of grouchy about more property tax for the general operations of local government. They might say yes to a levy for this or that particular purpose. But in terms of just raising property taxes above 1% for general governance, no. So 1334, again, triples the 1% to 3% for cities and counties. And they don't need voter approval. They can just do it every year. 3%, 3%, 3%. Now, think about how that compounds over time. You go 1%, 1%, 1% versus 3%, 3%, 3%. And you space that out over 9 or 10 years, and you can see how much higher your property tax burden will be. This deserves much more attention than it is getting. I dearly hope that if it does pass, there will be a referendum to strike it down. Because here we go again. Government saying, you know, the one-party regime in Olympia saying, oh, we're on the side of working-class people. We're against regressive taxation. We only believe, you know, we think it's the rich who need to pay their fair share. And yet they enthusiastically supported the Climate Commitment Act, which was a backdoor gas tax increase far in excess of any previous regular gas tax increase. Went up to 45 cents a gallon. It's currently closer to, I think, 27 cents a gallon. But that's an increase in one of the most regressive taxes in Washington. Democrats say, oh, yes, it's regressive. But, you know, we're initially imposing the tax on the fuel companies, pretending not to know what anyone who has a rudimentary grasp of economics knows, which is that taxes like that will be passed on, reflected in higher prices. So they knew this would happen, and they did it anyway. And then they can always say, oh, but remember, it's for a cleaner planet. It's for climate change. So this bill right now is being heard. The hearing is going on as we speak. And so here's what I would like you to do. It's a little late to jump in your car and head down to Olympia. You can still be heard by your state representatives and senator. All you need to do is call the legislative hotline. This is a call to action for KVI listeners. If you don't want government raising property taxes for cities and counties, call the legislative hotline right now. It's 1-800-562-6000. Again, that's 800-562-6000. And when the very nice operator answers the phone, say, I want my state representative, my state representatives to oppose HB 1334. No property tax increase. Just that simple. Now, if you don't know the name of both of your state representatives and senator, don't worry about it. Because when you tell the operator where you're from, what community you're from, he or she will say, oh, let me look. Yes, you have Senator, you have Representative Frick and Representative Frack and Senator Smith. And you say, yes, I would like to send this message to all three. Or you can just send it to the House members, since this is a bill that's currently in the House. But if it passes in the House, and it's got a very good chance of doing so, then it will migrate to the Senate. So again, call to action for KVI listeners. Please call the legislative hotline today, this morning, right now. 800-562-6000. That is 800-562-6000. Say, please tell my state representatives and senator, if you want, vote no on HB 1334. No property tax increase. Because 1334 allows a property tax increase. So you want to say no property tax increase, no on HB 1334. one last time. No property tax increase. No. On HB 1334. Maybe, just maybe, we'll get this thing derailed because it's a terrible, terrible bill. There's several lousy bills. I mean, isn't it interesting the dichotomy between Washington, D.C., where so much is happening that is so good for the country and so overdue, and then in Olympia, they're all running in the wrong direction. The one-party regime, obviously it's the Democrats in Olympia as opposed to the Republicans in D.C., and the leaders in, particularly in the House, but also some prominent state senators, could easily have fit in on the Seattle City Council of 4 or 5 years ago. They're that radical. They're that out of touch. And they're that impervious to their constituents. A shocking number of the most radical members of the legislature are outside the city of Seattle. They're every bit as left wing, every bit as out of touch. So that is why we are happy to join the battle. Now, let me say, by the way, I'd much rather have it this way than the other way around. Can you imagine if Kamala Harris had a Democrat Congress? And, you know, would you trade that for a Republican governor or a Republican legislature? I don't think so. No, not by a long shot. I like having a Republican Congress and Donald Trump in the White House. I'll take that. But we have to limit the damage that the legislature can do. All right, it's coming up here on 17 minutes after 8 o'clock. By the way, one more sign of how Donald Trump's executive orders are already having an impact. PBS, Public Broadcasting System, has announced the departure of that network's two DEI executives. Quote, to ensure that we are complying with the president's executive order, we have closed our DEI office, and Cecilia Loving and Gina Lau are leaving PBS. I know you join me in wishing them well in their future endeavors. Close quote. As you can guess, there's a story behind this announcement, and you're going to like it. But it just shows you how conniving and how sneaky the political left can be. All right, on the KVI text line, which, of course, you can always leave a message, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We take your text messages, try and read some of them back. Earlier today, we were talking about the burly, 6'2", 245-pound hockey dad who was unhappy with the way the game was being refereed. His son is under 12. That was the under-12 hockey league was taken to the ice at the Seattle Kraken's Iceplex out there near Northgate. And he went out and confronted the referees, who are ages 13 and 14, and pushed them both down on the ice. It's on video, and it's just stunning to see this. Anyway, Gary, Mount Lake Terrace, said, I fell in love with hockey when I was in first grade. I played fourth grade to my senior year in high school. I refereed from 1976 to 1989. Back then, parents policed themselves for the most part. that sorry excuse for a dad that has a kid playing, I feel sorry for the kid. You know, I thought about that too. Aaron, Bonnie Lake. I had mentioned earlier in the show, Donald Trump's approval ratings, which are not only higher now than they ever were at any point during his first term in office, but he's had more days, 3 weeks into the job, he's had more days with voters, more than 50% of the voters approving versus disapproving. He's had more days in his first 3 weeks of approval than he had in all 4 years. Aaron says, just wait for Donald Trump's approval ratings after he implements no taxes on tips and no taxes on overtime. It should really spike when people feel the positive cash flow in their wallet. And then if energy prices continue to, or energy prices drive down gasoline prices, that'll be another nice boost as well. Thank you. Great reminder, Aaron. Correct on both counts.
So many good servers have left, John. Some of my favorites at restaurants.
Have left?
Yeah, because that whole tip thing, you know, and being taxed on tips. I mean, I did it at the Edgewater. That's what I lived on as a young adult and trying to get into radio studies.
You know, instead of raising the minimum wage, why don't we decrease the government's take instead? Okay? Why don't we give every server, every waiter and waitress and bartender, everyone who is in any kind of service industry who relies on tips, why don't we give them a working class tax break? No tax on tips. Seems fair to me. Seems like a good idea. And it won't have the deleterious negative effects of raising the minimum wage.
And we never expected tips. So it was like you performed. You put on that. That's where I learned how to smile. Being a shy kid.
That's why it's called a tip.
Right.
It's extra.
Yeah.
It's in recognition.
Here's 20 bucks. Your name's Mark. I like your smile. That happened to me one time.
Yes. Was it by a girl, I hope?
it was an older woman, and she was visiting Seattle, and she goes, you just have a nice smile. I said, well, thank you. And she goes, okay, coffee, whatever. And then she goes, here, this is for you. I go, no, that's way too much. You know, and this is at a time I was making $2.35 an hour. And she goes, no, your smile is worth it. I've never forgotten that.
Wow, very nice. All right, I'm smiling at you now.
I'll be no over there in a minute.
All right, 22 minutes after 8 o'clock, Philip G. Vandenberg III's favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists, coming right up. Good morning. Oh, back we are, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI, right where you need to be. Thank you very much for letting us be part of your listening day on this very beautiful but very cold 25-degree day. All right, Philip J. Vandenberg III, your favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists, go for it.
Yeah, we're going to jump in on the account of somebody from the political news website Midas Touch, M-E-I-D-A-S, Midas Touch. And it's progressive political politics, Democratic political politics. And they posted something to try and troll Donald Trump. So we'll get to this in just a moment. You'll hear what the exchange was on board Air Force One, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. So the senior digital editor at Midas Touch posted this, and it's an exchange between a reporter and Trump after Trump had made this announcement that he wanted to take over as chairman of the Kennedy Center in New York City. This is the performing arts facility in New York City. And so you're going to hear this exchange between the reporter and Trump, and the reporter is eventually going to ask Trump, oh, so did you see some of these shows? Is this why you want to take over as the chair of the Kennedy Center board?
Why do you want to be chairman of the Kennedy Center board?
Because I want to make sure it runs properly. We don't need woke at the Kennedy Center. We don't need, some of the shows were terrible. They're a disgrace that they were even put on. So I'll be there until such time as it gets to be running right.
Have you seen any shows there? How do you know they're terrible?
I didn't go. No, I got reports it was so bad I didn't want to go. There was nothing I wanted to see.
So the line that Trump, I didn't want to go, or there wasn't anything I wanted to see, they're trying to hold over Trump's head of how would he know what was going on there, that he needs to take over as the Kennedy Center chair. And I don't know that that even matters. So the Kennedy Center receives taxpayer money, does it not?
Well, okay.
That's the way I've heard it phrased.
I would have said to that reporter, hey, in your free time, are you going to go to that Nazi rally? No, I wouldn't go to a Nazi rally. How do you know it's bad unless you've actually gone there and listened to what the people have to say? Well, because it's a Nazi rally.
And I think when
Trump was referring to drag queen story hour for kids at the Kennedy Center.
Just think back to some of the red carpet stuff we've seen when they do some of their bigger events. And you've got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wearing the dress that says tax the rich. If it's becoming a political apparatus, then he's got a reason to consider getting involved in all of this.
So I'm glad that he is doing so. You can bet that if Obama had said he was going to make himself head of the Kennedy Center, there would have been zero pushback from the news media if that had been announced. All right. It is 31 minutes after 8 o'clock. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. The CNN director of polling operations looks at Donald Trump's popularity now compared to when he started his first term and talks about the huge difference. Why the change? I have a few ideas, and I'll share them with you right after this. 23 minutes to 9 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show. We're going to get to Donald Trump and what the polls are saying that has shocked CNN's polling director in just a moment. Before we get there, a couple of things. First, a reminder, special announcement on tomorrow's show at 8:03. Special announcement. The John Carlson Show at 8:03 tomorrow morning. Kick off the 8 o'clock hour. Yesterday, we talked about, and I don't know how we got into this part of the conversation. We were riffing on the Super Bowl. And it was mentioned, I think it was mentioned by me, that both the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles and quarterback Jalen Hurts went out of their way when they were being interviewed right after their triumphant victory in the Super Bowl to give credit to God and to Jesus for this wonderful and astonishing victory of the Philadelphia Eagles defeating the Kansas City Chiefs by nearly 3 touchdowns. It was just a huge, dominant display by the Eagles. And I said, you know, isn't it interesting? My son, Drew, not our senior sports correspondent, Matthew, but law school son, Drew, who said, have you ever noticed that athletes are much more quick to give credit to God than showbiz celebrities? You know, when they win an Oscar, when they win a Grammy, when they win an Emmy, a People's Choice Award, Golden Globe, whatever. Occasionally, you know, they will give credit to God, but not that often. And I think the times I've heard them give thanks to Jesus, you could count on one finger of one hand. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. Well, I came across this right before the Super Bowl. When the teams were practicing and meeting with the media, a Christian Reporter walked up and asked various members of the Philadelphia Eagles team about the importance of faith. And this is the some of the responses they received that, are very thoughtful and very heartfelt. You're going to hear from Anais Smith, Nick Morrow, Will Shipley, A.J. Brown, Jeremiah Trotter, and the quarterback, Jalen Hurts. It's all in 37 seconds. Here we go.
Why Jesus? Jesus is the reason why we are here today, bro.
You know, I believe in my Lord Savior Jesus Christ. You know, whatever hard time I'm in, I always lean on him.
We're all flesh. You know, we sin, and all sins are equal. You know, but he looks down on us as a as a proud son. And even when I make mistakes, he still loves me.
My faith is everything to me. But my favorite verse is Romans 8:18. The pain you have been feeling cannot compare it to the joy that is coming.
He made the ultimate sacrifice. Had his son die on the cross for our sins. He didn't have to do that. That shows like the type of love that he has for us.
Favorite Bible verse, John 13:7. You may not know now, but later you'll understand.
That was Jalen Hurts. You may not know now, but later you will understand.
And all this before.
This is before they won.
Probably okay. The most intense nervousness experience in life.
Yeah. But again, this was before the game. So they weren't just in the euphoria of victory. Oh, God, thank you so much. You know, but even after they won, their celebration and acknowledgement of God was heartfelt and sincere and serious. And here's a couple of other players. Here's Carl Blassingame, Rick Lovato, and back to Anais Smith and Paris Campbell.
A lot of people look at Christianity like you have to be holy to be in it. Come as you are, and Christianity is for the unholy. And and Jesus makes you holy. He clothes you in righteousness. So
what he did for our sins is something that I will always, always be in debt of.
Even when we stumbling and falling, he's still gonna hold us up and show us the right way.
You know, it doesn't matter what your life may look like right now. I know the power of Jesus Christ, and I know who my Lord is. And he has the power to change any moment, any situation, anything.
That's like 10 members of the Eagles. I think I'm becoming an Eagles fan.
Just for the record, I got to ask. I know listeners are scratching their head. Did our reporter go over to the Kansas City Chiefs and maybe talk a little bit too, or no time? Or
The answer is not in this particular media posting. However, I do know that a number of Kansas City Chiefs, including Patrick Mahomes, especially their place kicker, who actually made the news, Harrison Butker, he is a devout Roman Catholic and even gave a commencement address to an all-girls Catholic school, which received controversy but should not have. And to their credit, the ownership of the Kansas City Chiefs backed him up 100%. So, yes, there's a lot of this on both sides. But, no, it's really nice to see something like that. And I wish this was more a part of sports culture. Get away from the grievance and replace it with grace. Replace it with, you know, acknowledgments of faith. There was, I won't mention his name, but you both know him really well. Back in the old building when we were working with Como TV, I was standing next to someone who saw a highlight of a player, you know, catching a touchdown pass and, you know, pointing to heaven after he scored the touchdown, which is, you know, the glory goes to you. And he says, what is it with these athletes always calling attention to their religion? And I said, you know, I would much rather see a player call attention to God than call attention to himself. Then ham it up just for, you know, hey, everybody, look at me. You know, the way some players do, they ham it up for themselves. And it was a short conversation.
Yeah, I know. One of the favorite sayings I have.
He didn't have a comeback.
Great line from Mark Twain. I'll never forget. You know, the two most important days in life, the day you're born and the day you find out why.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Okay. Off to CNN and Harry Enten. Harry Enten talking about how stunned he was at the contrast between Donald Trump's poll numbers in his first month as president in his second term versus his poll numbers during his entire four-year first term. Here he is talking with Sarah Sidner from CNN.
CBS News out with a new poll showing that Americans seem to be liking what they're seeing, but it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Clearly she's not liking what she's seeing, but let's continue.
I mean, look, it's not just CBS. You know, I like to take an average of the polls. I like to take an average of the polls, and holy smokes. I mean, look at what the difference is between now versus 8 years ago during the first Trump term, right? This is Trump's net approval rating on February 10th. You go back to 2017. Trump was already underwater at minus 5 points on the net approval rating. That's approval minus disapproval. What a difference 8 years makes. He's on the positive side of the ledger at plus 4 points. And again, it's not just the CBS News poll. We're talking about the Gallup poll. We're talking about the Ipsos poll. We are talking about the Pew poll. All of these respective pollsters have Trump in a better position now than they did 8 years ago. The bottom line is Americans are far more likely to say they like what they're seeing now versus what they felt during Trump's first term.
Okay, so how rare is this? Are you going to show us sort of where we're at now and how rare it is that this number
changed?
Yeah,
so I want you to take a look at this plus size, this plus sign, right? Compare that to the negative sign. Being on the plus size of the ledger, right? In positive net approval territory, a positive net approval rating for Donald Trump. Again, whoa. Entire first term, just 11 days, Donald Trump had a net positive approval rating. Compare that to the second term just so far. Every single day of Trump's second term so far, he has been on the positive side of the ledger. 21 days, all 3 weeks. That's already 10 more days than he was in his entire first term. So again, this is just another sign that Americans are far more likely to like what they're seeing in his second term than they were during his first term.
Okay. The question is why? And I think it's very simple. It's because the people, the American electorate, is looking at Donald Trump today versus 4 years of failure, extremism, and dishonesty. They are comparing now to what was in the last 4 years under Biden and Kamala Harris. And the other thing that's interesting about that CBS poll, again, 7 out of 10, so well into those who are not pro-Trump, said that the man is keeping his promises. 7 out of 10 people say Trump is doing what he campaigned to do. So no underhanded, you know, actions or no, big surprise that, hey, what do you know? Joe Biden's opening up the southern border after campaigning as a moderate who would unify the country. No, Donald Trump said, here's exactly what I'm going to do, spelled it out. Now he's doing it. Most Americans want that to happen. They're pleased with him. Even many who aren't acknowledge, nope, the man's keeping his word. That matters. It's 49 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, 11 minutes to 9 o'clock, The Commute with Carlson. Good morning. I've always liked this song, but I don't know the artist, do I?
Michelle Branch. Right. Young Acoustics, of course, with the backup of Carlos.
She's an interesting story.
I can hear the Santana in this song. Okay.
She's married to the drummer of the Black Keys, which is a two-person, very popular kind of garage rock band, Keys.
She had been married to the drummer for Spinal Tap, but that relationship blew up.
Game of Love, you want to add it to your music list, by the way. Santana, Michelle Branch.
Okay. It is 55 minutes after 8. We're going to hold that PBS story until tomorrow because it's a good one. Tomorrow, of course, our legendary lyrics contest. And tomorrow at 8:03, a special announcement on the John Carlson Show. So there's three additional reasons for listening to the John Carlson Show. Remember to call that legislative hotline about that bill that would triple property taxes. You heard that right. Triple property tax increases that are currently limited by law to 1% would allow them to rise by 3%. That number to the legislative hotline, 800-562-6000. That's 800-562-6000. The message, no property tax increase, no on HB 1334. Talk tomorrow.